It's now time to light a fire and emerge from the darkness into the world of the strange and unusual. As we seek answers to those cosmic questions, time to awaken the magic from within as we open the doors to the unknown with Cosmic Questions.
Cosmic Questions.
And now, your entertaining and charming host, as well as magical universal guide to the unknown, Cheryl Costa.
Cheryl Costa. Cheryl Costa.
Welcome to Cosmic Questions. I'm your host, Cheryl Costa, and I am a broom totin', cauldron stirring, goddess worshiping witch, and I have been for 40 years. And beyond that, I'm just an elder parish priestess with a microphone. In the coming weeks on this program, we're going to talk about the art, the science, and the lifestyle that is witchcraft. The opinions of my radio guests and myself may not necessarily represent every tradition of witchcraft, but we're going to give you a pretty good snapshot of who we are and who we are not. So sit back and listen. Hopefully you'll learn something. Remember this, we are the witches and we have returned. Okay. I've got a real treat today. I've got a guest here who's an old school gardenarian, and this is going to be a lot of fun. My guest today is Lady Passion, also known as Dixie Dearman. She's down in Asheville, North Carolina. She's of Irish and Swiss ancestry. She's been a public witch since about 1976. She's old school like myself. Her magical name derives from Lady, her title that she received as a female witch. It's a third degree in the gardenarian tradition. The priestess becomes the high priestess. And Passion, part of her name, also describes her yen for all things magical. So her full title, being a third degree high priestess, is Queen Lady Passion, and queen being the traditional gardenarian designation for a high priestess who is hived off from several other covens, and she's got several other covens that have hived off from her. Cosmic Questions welcomes you, Lady Passion. Thank you for visiting us today.
You're most welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, the way I connected with Lady Passion is I have a need that has sprung up after many years of not really being out there in public. And I realized that I might have to do some large public rituals sometime in the near future for a function I've been contracted to help with. And I struggled. I thought, my God, I've been doing solitary stuff for years, you know, and I've done coven stuff for years, but I had to really think about it and said, I really haven't done anything of the public relations kind of circles. So I went looking over, I went to Barnes and Noble, got looking through the books. And after I crawled through over 100 books and probably 60 of them were spell books, I found this lovely book called Rituals and Sabbats by Lady Passion, High Priestess. And I'm going to pronounce his name wrong. Duvet, High Priest?
Duvet.
Of the Coven Olden Wild. Mm-hmm. Okay. Of the Coven Ovenwild, right?
Oldenwild.
Oldenwild, okay. And I'll tell you, this is it's about sacred rites and seasonal celebrations, and it is to the point. It is like your do-it-yourself guide to writing a ritual, what you want to include in it. Here's the traditional stuff and structure, and then there's, you know, here's how you can tweak it for your own needs. And I was thoroughly impressed. There was stuff here that I had long forgotten, and there was stuff here I never learned. So, Lady Passion, what inspired you to write this wonderful book?
We had done 20 years of free public witch rituals in Asheville. We were the first to do so. We had generations start bringing their children, and then their children grew up, and they brought their children, babes at breast, people in wheelchairs. We said, come one, come all. The only thing is, you have to participate. No gawkers. We do not believe that witchcraft is a spectator sport. And so everybody gets hand in hand and throws down some wicked traditional magic, learn how to do it from different cultures, different themes every year. And we still do public Sabbats, only now we do them in our home for, you know, adults, teens, college people especially, you know, so that we can be a bit more free, because the 20 years of it were family friendly, but they were all about witchcraft. I mean, throwing down. And so they were so wildly popular, 6,000 or more people would come at a time. And so you have to learn very fast how to make it safe, spooky, traditional, embracing, diverse, keep people moving. And we learned so much. And we battled with the city and, you know, just lots of people over the years. So we learned all manner of tricks to do it well, safely, and popularly. And so it was, we wanted to bring back the old community fair rights, if you will. People always used to go, and now they've been tamped out, drummed out, won't be funded by cities. And so we're like, what a shame, you know, what a great bonding thing for the neighborhood. Also, it was a way for us to give back to the city, who lets us live without molesting. In fact, they support us. And so it was a give back. It was also educational and great fun, and it really put the sacred back into the holiday, the mundane holiday of Halloween.
Now, when you said you had issues, probably early on, you had issues with the city and it invite certain things. What was it? Crowd size or license, you know, permit for that kind of thing, or what kind of issues did you have?
Well, most of it was educational. Because, you know, when we came out, nobody knew the difference between a pagan, a witch, what Wicca was. There's always a fear factor, and we live in the mountains.
Yep.
And so we had to educate the populace and city officials. We had to go through the Parks and Rec Department a lot for tons of permits. And they don't call it Parks and Rec for nothing. So they put up impediments. They put up a lot of impediments. You know, one year they made us get $1 million of event insurance because they considered our rights dangerous because they were so participatory. And so we put up our coven stat as collateral in case of anything. I'm proud to say that in all of our years, we've never had a single injury, and we never have. And I've been an RN for over 31 years, so that's key to me. People need to be safe but also ecstatic. You know, and let themselves go. And so I managed to do that with aplomb. Now witchcraft is chic here. A lot of people, my courage showed such commitment over time that now everybody's picked up the other Sabbaths. And so after 20 years, we decide we've had our fun, we've learned enough, and it's time for young people to step in and to fill the breach. We don't want to hog it forever, and they have. So that's been very gratifying.
Well, I must tell you, I was doing some business with some people down in Asheville over the past year or so, and I said, you wouldn't know of any Wicca covens or something like that down there. He said, oh, yeah, we've got this really fantastic witch down here that does these big public things, but yeah. nobody could put me in touch with you. And
I'm everywhere. We're very public internationally. We're international author, best-selling authors. We post our phone number, our address. We're extremely fan-friendly and very amenable to people coming through, wanting to meet us, and tons do. So.
What was interesting, they were protective of you.
Well,
and these
course,
were not. These were non. This was non-witchcraft people being very protective, protective of their local witch, and I was very impressed.
Well, that's because mountain people are skeptical, and rightly so. There are a lot of people that come in transient-like. All they want to know is, are you serious? Are you consistent? And then they'll embrace you. And we're all those things. Plus, we have done a lot of local activism based on our pagan tenets and what upsets us and what we feel like are bigger. And we've saved City Park. We've saved century-old magnolia trees. We've created a people's pub. We've done a lot of things that garnered us respect, because even though at first they thought, what is this? Now we're very beloved, and other people took courage, and now they are doing activistic things to protect their neighborhoods, the city as well. It, like I say, the whole thing has been gratifying.
I One of the things I noticed in book, this is before we get into any of the ritual stuff I want to talk about. One of the points you made, and my listeners know that I feel this way. I feel that a good high priestess has to be sort of a theatrical producer. Okay, you can't be having a junior priestess out there. I like to call the goddess, you know, and wimpy. I mean, they got to have some force to their voice, you know, and do it upright, you know.
Conviction.
Conviction. And by golly, you talk about that in earnest in this book, and I'm very impressed.
Absolutely. And it's you can't start something you're not willing to finish. You've got to always, as a high priestess, take point of any backlash, any problems. You've got to be the leader. And I am. And I am not afraid of any official. To me, they're just a person, got lucky or, you know, fell into politics, whatever. I am not cowed. I don't bend my knee to anyone. I'm not intimidated by anyone. You bring it, I'll finish you. And so, you know, just don't get in my way. And so that's the deal, and that has worked. And I don't think anything less would have, because there are so many petty despots out there, you know, with their little tiny niche bailiwick, and they, you know, they each try to combine to thwart you, and I don't allow thwarting. I don't allow it.
Okay, yeah. Let's go back to the beginning. You plugged into being a witch in the 70s.
Yes.
I remember that era very well. I remember that era very well. There wasn't a lot out there, and unless you
nothing.
And so, how did you plug in?
I knew when I was born psychic, and I went out, came out accidentally when I was five, and as I started entering my teen years, the powers were just so uncontrollable in a way. They were just out there for all to see, and so I was outed on the playground. People came to me and says, "Are you or aren't you?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And from that day forward, I've been public, and I've certainly practiced every single day. And so after a while, you hone skills that, you know, then you can turn and teach and get more formal training, and I've done all those things. And so I just was bold about it. I felt like I was proud to be part of the world's oldest religion, and that still remains the world's largest. And I'm proud of that. So that pride, I think, translates to a lot of people.
Yes, I think it does. It really does. And it's amazing, once you get past helping everybody understand that we're not the Hollywood stereotypes.
We're better.
Yeah, we're much better than that. And
we're more powerful than they even think. You know, probably.
Well, we tend to be good neighbors, and a lot of people don't understand that. So
we are good neighbors, but being a good neighbor takes work. You have to keep your hand in local government corruption and call out people. You have to oppose them. You have to protest. You have to do many things to keep your city going on a better track and always improving. And that's what we've done.
So, obviously, you've had a lot of students over the years.
Too many to count. Hundreds and hundreds. Literally.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, you've hived off a lot of covens and circles?
I have. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So,
and they all take part of their name from either coven, from either Oldenwild. Some of them are called Highland Wild, because this is also known as the Highlands. Meadow Wild, some form of it, just to show their connection to the Mother Coven, my coven.
Okay, well, we've got spring, our spring solstice coming up, okay?
Equinox.
So, if you were going to give advice to some priestess who's listening to this thing and who has no experience in this, what would your advice be on setting up and doing a small ritual for a small group of people?
I'd say pick your theme. What part of the equinox do you want to emphasize? Is there a particular culture's magic that you want to educate people on and show, hey, you didn't know this, but, you know, this other culture, this is how they do it. Pick your theme. pick your venue, get permits, or if you have to, go through that process. Sometimes there are forms and people that you have to go through, especially when you're beginning. Pick your decor. Make sure that it jives with the season. So the equinox is about kind of, it's the tilting point from winter to spring. People are starting to get springbok. They're starting, you know, cabin fever can be over. What do they want to accomplish and start working towards the goals that they have during the warmer months? That's one option. There's so many. And the Rituals and Sabbats book has tons. Do they want to have a feast with it? Do they, you know, what kind of age group do they want to focus on or invite? Do they want to make it anybody come? And also work on the participatory factor. There's nothing worse in this world than people standing around in a little chilly, you know, with nothing to do, trying to listen to a high priest and high priestess in the center of the circle, which may be pretty far away from them, not being able to hear, being bored, not feeling energized. So that would be a really good thing to make sure that they have a lot of movement. Now, how do you want to do that? Do you want to do that with chanting and a line dance or a circle dance? Do you want to do that with something very ecstatic, you know, a spiral dance? And what type of music and ambiance do they want to create? Because that's crucial. You got to set up an environment that's conducive to magic. And so all those factors, they need to, you know, make a list and refine it and then work towards making all that happen.
Since you have a team, you probably have plenty of maidens that are in your coven structure, so you probably have plenty of help.
Well, even when you don't, your whole point is to have supporters. People that may not come to always the meetings, but boy, they will be there to help you set up and decorate all day long in preparation for this, and they'll fully participate. And then they'll help you break it down and back into boxes so you can take it all home and redistribute it. And so we have a lot of those as well. They're busy folks, but boy, if I snap my fingers and I say there's a public protest, it's absolutely vital, you got to be there, or we're, you know, here's, it's time for the annual thing, I can count on them to come, bring food to help us out, you know, put their skills to use, best use, to enable the whole thing, because they know it's a big deal. I feature usually 4 acres at a time, and so that's a lot to decorate, inch by inch. And so, you know, from the treetops down to whatever, you know, people might be walking, you know, footfalls. And so, you know, you got to anticipate what your time is so that if it's after dark, which a lot of witch rites are, you know, what can you use that may glow in the dark, tiki torches, what can you do, what kind of lighting can you use that sets a real witchy mood? All these technical details, you learn as you go, but a lot of those secrets are in that book.
I noticed that, and that is what impressed me. Very frequently, you never hear about the technical details, or what I'm going to call the stagecraft of setting one of these things up. You know, it is very
but
much
when
so.
When you do it, and you do it with precision and dedication and to the letter, it's so impressive, folks. It wows them in the way they should be. Very much like the ancient Dionysian rites of old, the Eleusinian mysteries, and even temple work back in the day.
Thank you. Thank you.
And so, you know, it should never be underestimated that you're there to impress people, to make them feel power and feel as one with nature, as one with the gods, as one with everybody, even strangers they don't know, but you're all in it together towards a common purpose. And so you don't, you know, it breaks the ice, and you get people's true hearts, you know, coming to the fore. People cry, they laugh, they, you know, they lose themselves in the magic of the moment, and that is your goal. That's your ultimate goal.
Okay, we're a few minutes out from break, but I think the question I want to ask is, you've got thousands of people coming, and there are obviously going to be new people coming. Do you ever get a certain amount of resistance from the people who'd rather just lurk and they don't want to participate. How do you handle that?
Since I'm the one who, you know, decorates the, you know, humongous circles and Diva helps with, you know, the sinking of the torches so it's clearly defined, you know, the first thing I do is everybody has to be admitted. Nope, you do not get to stand there. Nope, you do not either. You either need to come inside the circle and participate fully or you need to leave. And so that's that. Again. You know, they can take pictures, they can videotape, whatever they want, but they got to be in it, and they got to be moving, and the only way they're going to really be able to give you your due after all your hard work and everything is to capture that, but they also have to experience it, and that's the best way to end up with really good results, is that you win people over that were initially, I don't know, you know, oh, gee, I don't know. And boy, once they do it, they're yours for life.
No, I hear you. Believe me, I do. A question. We're 3 minutes out. I think when you said that thing about that you allow them to take pictures and such. Now, I know priestesses that have done like public circles, and they say, well, you wouldn't be taking pictures at a Catholic mass or something. Why are you taking pictures in our rites? But I think we have the need to have some positive publicity, personally.
Oh, no, we don't. We've got tons of positive publicity. Believe me, that's all we get. But I think it's good because many times they send them back and we can post them and show people, look, see, this is something a lot of your families can do.
Thank you.
And also, you know, we're not trying to out anybody who wants to be secret. But a lot of people come in costume and, you know, you wouldn't know them anyway. And we encourage that if that's what they want to do. But it's just an exhortive way to show how active witchcraft is. And it's not a passive pew sport. You know, we don't just sit around twiddling our thumbs and yelling om. You know, this is very ecstatic. And it really gets Americans off of their, you know, quite a down, tamped down couch. And to show them that, oh my goodness, this, you know, I not only endured it, I enjoyed it, I was thrilled by it, it affected me. And, you know, they can hear the drums and the music for weeks after. It really, it fills their soul. And you can't just look and have that happen. You got to be in it.
You're listening to Cosmic Questions. I'm your host, Cheryl Costa. My guest today is Lady Passion. She is a high priestess in Asheville, North Carolina. And we're talking about rituals and Sabbats today. And she's talking about doing big ones, the proverbial town square kind of things with thousands and thousands of people. And this is a real learning lesson. So we'll be back after these commercial messages, and we'll talk more with Lady Passion.
This is Cosmic Questions.
Cosmic Questions.
Hosted by Cheryl Costa. Opening the doors to the unknown, one show at a time.
Yeah, I'm working. Leave me alone.
The phone lines are open at 702-425-9230. That's 702-425-9230. Worldwide callers use Skype name KCOR Radio.
It's as simple as that.
Back after this.
Hello, KCOR listeners. Lorian Fenton here, inviting you to join me at UFO MegaCon, a new 7-day and 8-night immersion event from the original producers of the world's largest and longest UFO conferences in recent history. There will be 50 speakers, UFO military witness whistleblowers, award-winning filmmakers, and special guests discussing all things UFO, alien, and disclosure. UFO MegaCon will premiere never-heard-before speakers bringing you new and amazing information. There will be experiencer groups, skywatches, musical entertainment, and even a game show with George Norrie. Join me at UFO MegaCon March 24th through 30th in Laughlin, Nevada. Truly the one and only conference you need to attend this year. Check it out at UFOMegaCon.com. That's UFOMegaCon.com.
The all-new KCOR Digital Radio Network.
Great. Make a note of it.
It's great!
Looking for a radio show like no other?
We need something brand new.
Then tune into the KCOR Digital Radio Network, Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, and get ready for The Quantum Shift. A great shift of consciousness is sweeping across the Earth. Are you ready for the dimensional shift?
It is amazing, is it not?
The Quantum Shift. Quantum
Shift. Hosted by Dr. Sam Muggsy, Kent Dunn, and Drake Bailey.
Be part of the fifth dimensional reality, where consciousness prevails and the universal law of one is the only true reality. The Quantum Shift. Quantum Shift. Quantum Shift. Live Tuesdays, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Exclusively on the KCOR Digital Radio Network.
Toxins are everywhere, from the air we breathe to the food we eat and the water we drink. In a world where 80,000 known toxins and heavy metals threaten our very existence, how are you going to protect yourself and your loved ones? Introducing Pure Body Extra Strength, the world's first colloidal zeolite that helps trap and remove toxins as well as heavy metals from your body that are messing with your memory, clarity, sleep, and focus. Don't just take our word for it, or the testimonials from our thousands of happy customers. Check out the hundreds of articles and case studies on the National Institute of Health website, proving zeolite's powerful ability to remove toxins. For a limited time, listeners to KCOR will receive 10% off their first order. To get started, go to TryPureBody.com and enter promo code Radio 10. Again, that's TryPureBody.com. Toxic junk is all around us, but now you can take back control of your health and protect yourself by detoxing with Pure Body Extra Strength. You'll be on your way to sleeping better, thinking more clearly, and feeling more energetic. Go to TryPureBody.com right now and get started today.
Going live in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back to Cosmic Questions with Cheryl Costa.
I'm telling you, she is a real ball buster.
To join the conversation, call 702-425-9230.
Give us a call now.
That's 702-425-9230. Worldwide callers, find us on Skype under KCOR Radio.
Hello.
Share your thoughts of the show on Twitter by using hashtag KCOR at KCOR Radio. Or join the live conversation in our chat room at KCORradio.com.
It's as simple as that.
Once again, let us open the doors to the unknown as we return you to Cosmic Questions with your host, Cheryl Costa.
Cheryl Costa.
Welcome back to Cosmic Questions, cosmonauts. Okay, we got a really great guest today. We've got Lady Passion from Asheville, North Carolina, and she's one of the priestesses that do these big public rituals. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6,000 people. This is a cool thing. And guess what? We've generated some questions. So, by the way, if you want to call us. If you want to text it in, by all means. Lady Passion, welcome back. I got a question here from Jeremy, and it says, some states like Illinois still have laws on the books about practicing witchcraft in public. It isn't technically enforced, but it still is on the books. Are there other states that have laws like this still effective, and would that affect doing public ritual? And I'll tell you, my first take is that, they might have the laws out there, but if you go through the normal permit process, it probably is not an issue. What are your thoughts?
Actually, it is an issue. We rescinded the anti-divination law that was on the books for 50 years or so throughout the state of North Carolina. Now, it took us 6 years to do that, but we used these public rites to defy that law and to put pressure on the state legislature to rescind it statewide, and it worked, and we succeeded. So anytime there is a bigoted law, whether it's antiquated or just plain bigoted, then you have to attack that. You have to protest that. You have to post the numbers of any official to contact and to oppose and so we did that. And so I just say, witches unite and stand up. Whether you're just one person to start it, do protests that are very public. Educate the populace, and you can change the law. You must change the law because it's a human right to have your freedom of religion. So anything that does, that impedes that is bigoted, and you can totally undo that. And you should. It's a travesty that such laws may remain. You got to look at the state ordinance. county ordinances and your local ordinances and the state, get them eliminated, period.
Okay. Another question we have from Samantha. And Samantha is saying, by the way, Lady Passion, your phone was breaking up a little bit. I don't know if your batteries are going or what. Just wanted to give you a heads up.
Yeah. Okay. I had to move. We got a knock at the door.
Okay, very good. Okay, Samantha sent this note over on Skype and asking whether or not either one of us have gone to Stonehenge and participated in the seasonal events there. No, I have not had that opportunity myself. What about you?
Well, when the Goodly Spell Book, which was our first major book that came out, Old Spells for Modern Problems, traditional witches in England were so impressed by it, they asked us to come and headline the summer solstice celebrations and be key speakers teachers in Lancashire, England, and we did. And on the way, I didn't want to go to Stonehenge, too touristy. We went instead to Avebury, which hope everyone can ever do. It's like a mecca. It's great. We spent the night overnight in the only manor there, we slept inside the stone circle. The experience was transformative, wonderful. We've got a free screensaver that shows one of the stones with a hand-cut spiral in it from antiquity, with a beautiful rainbow sun spray coming at it, as a free screensaver on our website for anybody who wants to see that and use that. It was phenomenal. And so I don't recommend Stonehenge. I recommend Avebury.
Yeah,
you can walk all around it. It's a teeny tiny, wonderful little place. And it's just not touristy like that.
So, okay. You do all the your coven group does all the Sabbats, probably do Esbats as well, the moon ceremonies.
We do.
Okay. Now, your big public rituals, open to the general public, that is, do you do them faithfully, or prefer, you probably do Samhain.
We always do that. We do it all. We observe all the Sabbaths as any witch should, every single one, each to their season and each in their own way. But Samhain was the one that I chose because it's the most difficult for people to understand and conquer, stereotype wise. And so we put that to rout, and we show this is how Hispanics do it. Like, for instance, this is how you do it as a Day of the Dead. This is how people in other countries do it. This is how Indo-Europeans do it. This is how Gardnerians do it. So every year has been a different theme. You never have to run out of themes. But we did it on a traditional basis, and we said, this is what this involves. Let everybody know. Let them know what kind of costume, we were kind of featuring, and what music and all that stuff. And they totally get into it because they trust us. They know we're not going to tell them lies or mislead them, that we're the real deal.
You know, in fact, that probably makes the most sense, since that is probably the most culturally charged holiday associated with witches.
It is. And when you go into a convenience store and you see a decor that it's got a witch in a jail cell in it, I demanded the manager. I'm like, take it down now. And, it started with things like that. And then once, everybody who's anybody had been to the rituals, their word of mouth going, man, you can't do that. You can't, be that way. Put a stamp out on that. And so now we don't encounter that anymore. But it took a couple of years of educating the populace and city officials. But, they came around, and now, as a nonprofit, we're to reduce by half the fees that they want for permits and this and that for religious nonprofits. Plus, in North Carolina, there's a statute against disrupting any religious ritual, including ours. And so if somebody tried to come and protest and create chaos, we just always posted that law for everybody to see. so that, you know, hey, don't do it, and you won't be arrested. And if you do try, you will be arrested. So we enforce that. We enforce our rights, and that's why it pays to know what your rights are.
We have a law like that here in New York State that you're not allowed. It's illegal to disrupt a religious service.
Yes, well, and I encourage pagans to just print that out, put it in a plastic thing so it's waterproof, and put it on a, you know, stick, you know, make sure people know, hey, don't start nothing and there won't be nothing.
Okay. If you're listening to the show and you have a question for myself or Lady Passion, by all means, either text it in through Skype or bring it in through the chat room or give us a call. They publicize the numbers here. We'd love to hear from you. This is a rare treat to talk to someone who knows how this is done. Okay. And that's why I had her on the show. I have my own reasons because I'm going to have to do it in the near future myself. Okay. So when you're planning something really big, let's just say a normal Wicca type of thing, a big witch circle, and you've got let's just lowball and say you got 1,000 people there. How do you handle something like wine and cakes?
Well, you can do dumb suppers where you have an elaborate feast set out. You can do it as a vignette that people pass by in a processional. Depends on how big your venue is,
right.
Your outdoor venue, which we often featured. Well, we always did. We always circled the doors. And so we have a lot of lovely parks around here that are about 4 acres each. And so, you know, you can do vignettes that people process or dance beside or can go, you know, you lead them into so they can take a mill around, you know, and feel what that is. There are millions of ways to do it. You can pass a chalice around. We didn't always feed our people. We provided water and candy and things, the minimum. But what we did do is, you know, we often did the traditional circle dance where you the high priest is, you know, hand in hand, leads people back, and you have to kiss every single person that's there, and the person behind you has to kiss them. And so there are different ways to express this, and to break the ice, and also to, you know, encourage camaraderie and investment in all participants in the success of the ritual, which is crucial.
When you start, let's talk about like the big public Samhain one. When you start working on that, how far in advance? What, 5-6 weeks?
Months. Pardon me? It depends on your thing. Like if you have to make a costume like I did 1 year, and it took 1,000 knots to do it. It was a head to toe traditional character from Mummer's place. I did it out of clothesline, and it took me months and months and months to make it. And then, I also made Old Charmer, the coven and kind of the city's mascot now, out of a replica skull of a proto-horse that's articulated so you can snap it. And he's led around, you know, somebody's underneath it, you know, animating him. Those types of things, those details, wow people, but it does take months. So I would usually start around July or August minimum. And it takes every day of steady work to make everything perfect. But you don't want any, you know, the front end is great because once you get into it, it's all over with the crying anyway. You're just decorating, you're just putting everything you planned into place. And so it's a lot easier. You're not caught at the last minute going, oh my goodness, you know.
For the acolytes out there, okay, understand that by her working on her dress, maybe even some of her ritual assistants are working on their costumes. That is part of the magic of building up to this bigger ritual.
That's right. It takes preparation. And witches who prepare very well and prepare. I have backup plans for my backup plans. And you have to do that because what if, you know, what is your backup plan for inclement weather? What is your backup plan for, first aid kits? Or how many fire extinguishers are you going to bring? you have to have backup plans for your backup plans. And that way you don't have to stress about it because you've got plan B, plan A, plan B, plan C. And so that's what I feature in. And I'm going, you know, I'm focusing on the plan A and its success. But failing that, if something goes awry, then I have a backup plan. And we don't skip a beat. It just, it looks as if we planned it that way because we did.
Okay, so, okay, aside from the costuming or what you were wearing, there's going to be a certain amount of ritual writing involved, especially if you're doing different themes every year, a Day of the Dead. You don't think so?
No, not really. What we feature are processionals, long line dances, always a finale spiral dance, which is so frenetic that by 6 minutes in, you're practically rolling on the ground. In ecstasy, you plan things like, well, do I want to give everybody snap sticks, you know, they can twirl around at the end. It's all in your vision, but you've got to envision what you would like the gods to see and then implement it. And the core remains the same, default circle procedure, how you cast. You know, and then you just give a few words, not a lot, definitely not preachy. It's more experiential. I don't want
right,
to talk a lot.
Right. No, words don't do it.
The very gist of it, and then basically go, trust me, and now follow. And, so a lot of things are always set, and people can rely on them. They know that the spiral dance is the finale. They know that free divinations and from a lot of people follow that. So once you get your basic premise down, they are comfortable with the fact that even though the theme might be different and some of their activities might be different, they know what it's leading up to.
A question that I just got that came to me was that after you do a big public ritual like that, invariably there will be people who will reach out to you folks afterwards, either right there at the event or in the weeks following. So do all of your hived off sister covens participate with absorbing new students that say, hey, I want to train in this?
It depends. A lot of people are so impressed with our work that they just, you know, naturally want to focus on us. I think it's more of a wait-and-see phenomenon. A lot of people get into witchcraft because they feel the power of that time, but whether or not it lasts over a month or two is rather debatable. And so there's a good time for them to read up on our works so that if they like them, they might be a good fit here and fit to meet later. Once their Samhain ecstasy's worn off, if they're really sincere. But certainly, we hand out a lot of cards at these things, business cards with our book covers on them, and our contact information. So it's organic, you know. Many people do have an initial influx. But we have a wait-and-see attitude. We really like commitment and sincerity that outlasts that kind of joyful season.
How do you get across to new people what the etiquette? I mean, people have been coming for years. They know what the etiquette is. How do you communicate the etiquette to newbies coming to your public stuff?
I tell people to, if you're in doubt, follow the person, you know, just follow the person who already has been here and knows. Don't worry about it. Face where we face. Turn how we turn. And I do a lot of hand-in-hand so they don't have to think about it. So I'm leading a circle of people, a line of 6,000 people, me. And so it's like follow the leader, only they're hand-in-hand, so they don't have a whole lot of choice. And that way they don't have to fear it or worry about it. And that's where that high participation comes from.
I think there's a natural human tendency to, when somebody's holding your hand and leading the way, and you're holding somebody's hand and leading their way, it sort of relaxes you. There's this camaraderie thing. Yes,
it does. It's contact. It's like we're all in this together. I'm not a stupid fool all by myself. and so you know that's crucial. And then once they see, yeah, I can be whipped around, you know, and yeah, my kid's doing great. She's having the ball. And, you know, nothing is hurting. No harm is coming here. And this whole thing is toward a purpose, and the purpose has been stated. If you do a ritual without a purpose, a goal for all those like minds to, like, focus on, that's no good. You have to have a purpose. And so every year, even though we have a theme, we also have an intent. And a lot of times it just coincides with being right before an election. So it may have some bearing on that. And, you know, whether, you know, we want to encourage people to vote and, you know, vote pro-pagan stuff, you know, like pro-nature, you know, that could be a part of the goal. It varies.
I guess one of the questions also comes up is how do you deal with this? A big event like this has some overhead cost. Do people participate and make donations to the to this thing, or is it just your coven organization just absorbs the whole cost? What happens if people want to make a donation? It's not like you pass the plate at the Sunday church.
No, they do it through secure PayPal online. They know that we've got tons of expenses, so there is often a lot of that. What often happens is afterwards, it generates a lot of my clients who want consultations, readings, help, which is a big part of what a high priestess should do, and certainly what I do. But often as not, we have to eat the cost, but we eat the cost because it's important. And, you know, we're highly creative, so we can make something out of nothing.
Yes.
That just wows people. And we've got a lot of, decor that we've amassed over the years. And so, you know, it can be both. You know, because they can donate to our religious nonprofit, that's charitable deduction. They can write off on their taxes. So they can feel doubly good about that. They could slip us some money for a free divination that we did them because they're grateful of what we said or how we did it. There's all manner of ways that we subsist or are supported.
That's excellent. That's excellent.
We also usually put out a big fishbowl that, you know, has a little dollar sign on it, you know, like on the div tables. If they want to put something in there, that's great.
That's brilliant.
But it's not something we talk about. It's not something that we even point out. You know, a lot of this is subtle, but, you know, that would be it.
That's something I tried to explain to a bunch of people, that normally it's not like we're passing a plate and we're not trying to build a bricks and mortar church out here. We're just going to have our ceremonies and evaporate into the woodwork when it's done, you know. And it's hard to get that across because so many people have been programmed into this idea that, oh, you have to go there and you have to tithe and such. And that's not the case with the way we do it. No.
Subtlety counts, being classy counts. There have been years, like, for instance, one year we did a pagan auction of fabulous religious items. And, you know, if people wanted to, you know, auction, you know, that, you know, buy that, that's fine. We actually feature a lot of giveaways, jewelry that they can prize and keep as a token. You know, we do lots of giveaways, snap sticks, you know, just lots of those. And so, you know, we don't mind being generous. In fact, we're fostering that generosity.
Okay. Well, we're coming towards the end of the show. If folks listening in want to contact your organization, how would they do that?
Oldenwilde.org. O-L-D-E-N. WILDE1word.org.
Okay, oldenwild.org. It's pretty easy to find. I found it.
Yeah.
I think the other thing is you have a lot of other books out there. You got, what, 12 books out there?
Yeah, yes. Well, there's people need a lot of information, and unfortunately, there's a lot of dreck out there from untrained authors making it up as they go along, or worse, just mining from previous authors. We are original, we're traditional, and, you know, our experience is what gives us so much to say. And we also have a unique author's voice that people really respond to.
Okay. That sounds excellent. If people want to email you, how would they reach out to you?
Oldenwild@gmail.com. It goes straight to me.
Okay. They could Google Lady Passion and Oldenwild, and you'll find them.
Betcha. I'm everywhere. We were one of the first public Wiccan websites on the internet, and we remain. We all have always had the same address, always the same phone number. It's in the phone book. It's posted on our websites, and the same URL for our coven Oldenwild. And so, you know, we're very consistent. So people have known for decades where to reach us, how to reach us, and that we're stable.
Lady Passion, thank you very much for being on Cosmic Questions. We'll be sure to have you back.
That would be fabulous.
Okay, folks, okay, this has been Cosmic Questions. I'm your host, Cheryl Costa. My guest today has been Lady Passion from Asheville, North Carolina, and she's been given a wonderful teaching on how to do public ritual in your hometown. Next week, I am going to be on the road, so the show has been pre-recorded, and it's going to feature Lady Belladonna and Dusty Dion, who are the Archpriestess and Archpriest of the Aquarian Tabernacle Church, and they're going to be talking about the Spring Mysteries. So listen in. That would be a fun show. We had a lot of fun recording that about a week ago. So you're listening to Cosmic Questions. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye now.
Been listening to Cosmic Questions with Cheryl Costa, live Tuesday midday 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the KCOR Digital Radio Network. To follow the works of Cheryl Costa, see upcoming guests, as well as links to past shows, please visit the Cosmic Questions show page at kcorradio.com.
What are we talking about?
Cheryl Costa. Cosmic Questions. Opening doors to the unknown.
This is KCOR Las Vegas, home of the Digital Radio Network, broadcasting from a shack just south of Area 51.
Wait, that doesn't exist.
This is the KCOR Digital Radio Network. Now for the news.